Matt Cochran. I am 16 years old. Today is November 28th. I'm speaking with Megan, who is my mother. We are recording in Pleasant Plain, Ohio. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
Well, I had an older sister who was 2 years older than me. And as a child, my mom described me as being a very happy child. I was very messy. Used to drive my sister crazy because she was very type A and everything perfect and within the lines. And all I ever wanted to be was my sister. But I drove her crazy. So I liked to sing. I liked to dance. I got kicked out of ballet class when I was little for hanging on the bar upside down. So, for the most part, I would say I was a happy child. I had a good childhood. Had a lot of friends I hung out with. Used to go to the pool in the summer. And it was good.
Tell me about a teacher or an other adult that had a big impact on your life while you were growing up.
I would say probably the adult that wasn't a parent would be my softball coach, Glenn Garrett, that we had. He worked with my dad over at Standard Register, but he was my softball coach. So we went to the Christian Academy from first to fifth grade. And then sixth grade, I got to come out and go to public school. So I didn't really have a lot of friends and was trying to get established with sports and stuff, and decided that I wanted to try to play softball. And this was the most gentle man and most patient man that I'd ever met, because he never once would raise his voice, no matter how many of us, you know, how many times we did something wrong or whatever. He would never raise his voice. And I remember at the tryouts that we had when everybody was picking teams, I couldn't hit the ball for the life of me. I'd never played softball. And he picked a bunch of us that hadn't played, because he wasn't looking to get a team that would win. You know, he was looking to help the girls and to help train somebody. Mm-hmm. And within 3 years, our team won the league, because we'd gotten good enough with the honest practice and all of the positive reinforcements. And he just had a really big effect on me at that point. And still, to look back, to have a coach that could train you and teach you everything you needed to know, but never raised his voice, never once yelled at any of us. So I always remember that. I thought that was good.
How long did you know Glenn?
I had him in sixth grade and seventh grade. His daughters were on our team, and I graduated with one of his daughters, Michelle. She came through high school with me, and then Kimberly, his younger daughter, is 2 years younger than us. So I knew him actively for the 2 years that he was coach, or 3 years that he was coaching us. And then would see him from time to time. His wife worked down at the grocery store at the IGA there on Ackerman, Cindy. So I would see Cindy every once in a while and talk to her. But I haven't gotten to talk to Glenn in years. So he was good.
What advice would you give to your teenage self?
Not to worry and think everything is the end of the world, because when you're a teenager, all you can think of is what is right in front of you, how the people treat you in school, how people treat you outside of school, and you really have no bearings of how big the world is and how small you become once you're outside of your school stuff. So just to be calm, learn to be who you are, accept who you are and just wait for time to pass, because you'll get through school, it'll pass, and then you come out in the world and you'll meet all kinds of people that do all kinds of different things, and you'll find out that it's okay. It's okay to be different, and that everything isn't going to end just because of the one thing that went bad. So I would tell myself to just breathe and be patient, because there's better things coming.
Now, how old were you when you realized this?
I was probably close to 30. I think before it really settled in, because you see bits and pieces of it as time goes. Like, it doesn't take very long at all. As soon as you graduate high school and mm-hmm. you get out into the working world,
mm-hmm.
then you realize how truly small and small-minded your high school is, and some of the people in there. And then you get out and you see all kinds of people that are even stranger than yourself and they function, you know, and you can come to work and do your stuff and go home and all of that, and they don't care what you showed up in, what you drove. Did you get there? Great, we're glad to have you. They don't care what you wear, you know, could be a uniform and you're fine for the day, just as long as you showed up. So everything isn't all about the cliques and all of that stuff. You'll have people you get along with or people that you don't get along with still in the working world. Annoying people. But I probably didn't actually settle in on that till your sister was a couple of years old, I would think, by the time it finally landed with me that I'm all right on my own, stand on my own 2 feet. I don't need to have everybody else's reassurance. I don't need to have everybody else's approval. My sun's gonna go down and it's gonna come up every day anyways, regardless of what everybody else thinks.
So would you say it's more of a mental thing rather than, I should say, a mental challenge to try and fight rather than needing the reassurance of everyone else?
It's just learning to be okay with yourself. And it's learning that there will be good days and that there will be bad days. And that they will pass. And that you go to bed and you can think it's the end of the world when you go to bed. But whether you think it's the end of the world or not, the sun comes up the next day. And you got another shot. So I think you have to, in order to really get that way, you got to learn to be alone. And you got to learn that you're okay. Mm-hmm. Once you learn you're okay if you're by yourself and doing your own thing, then that's when it locks in. Because a lot of times that's part of the high school stuff, is you want to be included, you want to be part of the group, you don't want to be different, you mm-hmm. don't want to be separate. And that's usually because you don't have your knowledge of yourself and your own being, or you don't have your confidence there a lot. And in school, a lot of times they think being different is bad, whereas I always try to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I tell you guys, nobody wants a box full of all blue crayons. You know, it's only good if you've got different colored crayons. Mm-hmm. Then you can make a better picture. So I always went for being different. But you have to learn to be alone and be okay with it and know that I'm right the way I am. This isn't how it's always going to be, but if it is, I'm okay with it that way. And then it settles. So it's all in your brain, man, of coming around to it. Because you'll always have yourself. No matter who's with you, you will always have yourself. And once you realize that that's okay, then the rest of it doesn't matter. It just adds to the cake. It's more decorations to the cake then.
What are your proudest moments, personally and professionally, in your life?
Well, you guys. Oh my gosh, as far as in my own world, learning to drive a semi. when everybody said I couldn't because I was too little and I was a girl, and drove it all across the country.
How much did you weigh at the time?
It was 105 pounds at that point. Well, I think I gained 105 pounds. I was 98 when I started, but I gained a whole 105 pounds on all my truck stop food. But that was fun. But having, I know it sounds cliche, but having you guys and you guys, all three of you, turning out as good as what you've turned out, because you've all, and it's funny because you've all got pieces of my personality, mm-hmm. and it's different pieces of my personality, but every one of you are respectful. Every one of you are intelligent. Every one of you are kind-hearted. You're all good to animals. You don't hurt any specific animal, you know, not a power thing like that. You're all genuine and funny, which is so cool because a lot of that's been, well, just from looking at your personalities, they're different aspects of me, but they're, I think it's because you guys have been around me and somehow or the other this stuff has transformed into being part of your personalities and your behaviors. So that's one of the things I'm the proudest of, is the fact that I've not single-handedly, because grandma helps and things like mm-hmm. that, but for the most part I've got you guys, you know, raised and dealt with my information and my rules and hopefully my examples, and everybody's turned out good. So that's probably the proudest personally I've got, is how well you guys have turned out. And then professionally, I kind of like the fact that I've got a varied background as far as what I can do, as far as my knowledge, the different paths that I've went down and the different industries and stuff that I've been in, that I can talk about a whole lot of different things, even a little bit on a whole bunch of different things. But if I had to pick one professionally, I would have to, I'd probably get in my CDL and learning to drive and driving across the country by myself and loving it. That's still my favorite job that I've had.
This is probably what, late 80s, early 90s, probably wasn't a generic thing for having a female driver.
Yeah, no, when I was driving, there weren't a lot of single females. That would have been 94, 95 was when I was driving. I was 24, 25, right around in there when I was driving. And yeah, they didn't have females. If they did, they were either very masculine, mm-hmm. or they were out with their husbands, like running teams.
Gotcha.
And stuff. So they didn't have young, single females that drove a semi. And I had my long hair and I had long fingernails. Oh my gosh. Total girl. There was no doubt. I was a girl. I remember they would laugh at me at the truck stops until I figured out to work smarter, not harder, because with the hoods, you had to go around to the tires and you had to take the latch hoods off so you could open the hood to the truck. And most of the guys, there's a foothole in the bottom of the hood and a handle on the top. And they just put their foot up in it and just pull the hood open. And I didn't weigh enough, so I'd have to get a hold of it and throw myself backwards off the front of the truck so that my body weight could tip the hood open so I could get up onto the tire to get up to clean my windshield off or check my oil or whatever. And they used to laugh at me till I got smart one day and I realized that if I put two fingers at the back, because the hood would come up over the tire and it would be right up against the cab, almost the firewall section, and you could put two fingers back there and lift, and it would go ahead and open the hood by itself. And then I didn't have to fling myself off the front of the truck. but I used to have, but I would still have to get a hold of it and put my foot up into the bottom of the thing to close it so it didn't slam shut and break it. So I would have to ride the hood up. It'd lift me up off the ground. And then I was standing on the bumper when it closed. So they would still tease me, but at least I could, I learned to get it open without looking like I was hernia-eating myself off the front of that truck.
Can you tell me about the dumbest thing you've ever did in your life?
Oh, Lord. There's so many. Well, the two that I would think are the dumbest have to do with racing cars. Like, it's a wonder I'm not dead. But I guess to look back at it now, it would be the one that I talk about where I had my buddy's car and was racing up 75 coming into Dayton and was doing 125 in that little car, zip-zapping in and out of traffic, changing lanes, coming up, and it was getting dark. It was dark. And just happened to see oncoming lights from southbound hit these lights on top of this car, and I thought, I bet that's a cop. And no sooner did I say that, I started to hit my brakes, then he flipped his lights on, and I shot past him, and I was doing 90 when I passed him. And it was a state patrolman. And he pulled me over. And, you know, the whole rigmarole, let me see your license and this, that, whatever. And then told me to get in the car with him. Walk up there and get in the car. And I opened the door and I got in the front seat. I didn't know you weren't supposed to get in the front. I didn't know he meant get in the back. He didn't open the door. So I hopped in the front seat and he sat down in the front seat and leaned up against his door and looked across his car at me like, what in the world? And it was so funny because he had mirrored aviator shades on. He's a young guy. I don't think he could have been any older than 35 at the most. And I still had my first driver's license. So I was 16, 17. Probably 17 at the time. 17? Yeah, probably 17. I don't even think I was 18. I might have been 17. And, no, I'd have been 18. I graduated high school. I would have been 18. And I hopped in the car with him. And I remember looking, man, they had all that stuff in that car. They had the computer. They had the radars and all that. And I hopped in that car and I was like, look at all this stuff. And I looked at him and I said, do you ever just turn that radar on just to watch everybody hit their brakes because all the radar detectors go off at one time? And he had gum, and he was sitting, he angled himself up against his door and was chewing on that gum and looking over at his aviators at me like, what in the world? And I was like, man, that's what I would do if I had one of these. I'd just mess with everybody. I'd just turn it on and let everybody start screaming. And then he was asking me if I had permission to have that car. And was asking whose name the car was under, you know. And I was telling him. And then he asked if I had permission to have that car. And I said, if you call them and they say I don't have permission to have this car, I said, you can impound this stupid car and take my butt home. And he looked at me and he says, if they say you don't have permission to have this car, we're going to impound the car and we're going to take your butt to jail for grand theft auto.
Yikes.
But it was so funny. We was in the car and he asked me, he says, do you know how fast you were going? And I told him and I said, no, but I know how fast I was going. Or I said, well, no, but I know how fast I was going when I passed you, and I was already on the brakes by that point. That was one of the first things he asked me, is if I knew how fast I was going. But yeah, that's probably, and believe it or not, I got out of that. I didn't get a ticket. I didn't get in trouble with anything. Just as soon as I answered him of whose car it was, because it was one of my friends over at the Marriott, and I had given him my friend's name, and right before dispatch came back with the name of the owner of the car, I said, no, wait a minute, it's under his wife's name. It's under Kim's name. And I no sooner got that out than she said it's reported to a Kim Mercado. And I looked at him like, told ya, you know, kind of stuff. So they called my friend. He worked security in there at the Marriott where I worked at that point. Well, where all of us worked. The wife worked in there too. And he called in there and called Pat. And Pat told him, yeah, that I had permission to have the car, you know, kind of stuff. But he had my license and he just kept flipping my license at me, shaking it at me. And he was like, now slow down, you know, but how in the world I got out of that? Because I was doing 125 and I passed him at 90 and speed limit at that point was 55. I was 40 over the speed limit when I passed him. He should have impounded the car and took me to jail right there.
Reckless driving 25 and over.
Yeah, yeah. But he was just stunned. I was so stupid at that point. He was just flabbergasted, I think, with who the heck hopped in the car with him. I don't think he'd ever had anybody hop in the front. Maybe they should keep the doors locked. Mm-hmm. Or open the back door. If they want to put you in the car, they should open the back door. Anytime I've ever seen anybody get in a police car, they've opened the door and they put their hand on your head and they tell you where to sit. Mm-hmm. And he told me to come on up and get in the car, so I hopped in the front seat. So yeah, don't do that. If you ever have to get in a police car, don't get in the front.
We'll keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Tell me about the day I was born. How did you feel the first time you saw me and held me?
Oh my gosh. I had to be induced with you guys. Finally, they had mercy on me and induced me. And it was kind of terrifying because Nicholas was born first. And Nikki wasn't breathing when Nick come out. They held him up, gray as can be. Here's your baby, Mom. And off he went. And I was like, why is he not crying? Why is he not crying? And then the doc's like, hold on, Mom, we've got another one. You still got to focus. You still got to push. And you wouldn't come out. You didn't drop. They were hoping that when we got Nicholas out of the way, that you would drop. And you did not. You did not drop. So doc had to go in and get you because you wouldn't drop. But you had the roundest little face. And you come out mad. You didn't want to be no part of being out. You was trying to hide in the first place. And you didn't want to come out. But you was, luckily, you were crying by that point, which is, you know, here's a little sweet face, but I couldn't believe it. I had both of you guys at the same time. And now all of a sudden I got two babies, but you looked different even to look at you because Nikki had his long face and you had your little round face. Mm-hmm. But you were my little dude, my little round-faced baby. That was my gift from God. That's why I called you Matthew because I was pregnant before he had you guys. And then I lost that pregnancy. And then I figured that's what you were because I got you back because I had Nicholas, but I got my second baby. So I figured you were my gift, my second one. I got my do-over again. But it was a crazy day. Everybody's making jokes and Papa Wayne was telling me to hurry up. He had other things to do. And, you know, like I'm laying there in labor with a picnic. It was great fun.
A lot of commotion.
Yeah, a lot of commotion. Thank goodness they took me out of the birthing room and rolled us all down into the emergency room. We were down in the operating room, the OR room, with our two sets of doctors and everything down there because of the high risk of twins.
Mm-hmm.
With all that. But yeah, your little face, little round face. Well, it was a good day. It was fun.
Just imagine it was a long day.
It was. They induced me early. I was laid in there for about 12 hours on Pitocin with trying to, you know, get the labor started and get dilated and all of that stuff. And then finally it kicked in. They kept turning it up a little bit and turning it up a little bit and finally got going. But yeah. Yeah, I don't remember labor being long. I remember having issues with your sister. I had bad back labor with Sissy. Oh, that was excruciating. I didn't have bad back labor with you guys, and it didn't seem like it was all that much pushing. I remember getting to hold your dad's hand and trying to crush it during contractions so that he could enjoy how lovely this was.
Just imagine during that situation, you just tend to get the strength of Hulk.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't happy. You know, he was not happy with crushing him. He couldn't breathe right either because he's supposed to be the breathing coach.
Mm-hmm.
Suck. Not a good breathing coach at all. They lose their brains. They can't focus. So, yeah, at least I got to squeeze him. I tried to crush his hand for him while we were there. But it was fun. I was tired afterwards, though. That was a long day. So. Everybody, get the heck out of my room. I didn't want to deal with nobody at that point. But that was good. Your little face. You're my little calm one.
What is your best advice for raising kids?
Teach them, if you can, be patient. Teach them self-confidence. Let them know it's okay to be different. Let them know it's okay to make a mistake. Let them know it's okay to trip and fall. Just make sure they know to get up. As long as you get up one more time, then you fall, you've beat it. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as you get up one more time. Be kind. Listen to people, but don't give up on yourself. You've got to push yourself. And the thing I always tell you guys, find what you love to do and learn to make a living at it. In that way, your work isn't so much of a job as much as it is a passion. That's what I would say with kids.
Tell me about where you grew up and what your childhood was like.
So, I consider my childhood split into two different locations. So, I remember living out in West Elix until just before Christmas of my 8th year. So I have a bunch of childhood memories, and that's mainly what I consider my childhood, is memories out there. And then for my 8th year and up, then we were in the big blue house up there, which I lived there more than I lived in West Elix, but I always considered West Elix my home, kind of a thing. I remember sliding. We would get bad snow. I was out there for the blizzard of 78 that everybody talks about, and I remember thinking I was going to die out there in the blizzard. I remember having Papaw's horn-rimmed glasses on, and I remember being stuck in snow up to my waist. Of course, I was 8 years old when the thing hit, but 7 or 8. But I remember that snow coming in, packing behind my glasses, and I'm thinking, this is it, folks. I'm gonna die right out here in my own backyard. I can see my house, but I couldn't move because the snow was coming in. I couldn't lift my legs up, and I thought, I'm gonna die right here. This is how it's going to happen. But I remember thinking, well, don't be too afraid, Megan, because they say when you lay down in the snow, you don't get really cold. You kind of get warm there for a while. It kind of insulates you, and then your body just slowly gets cold, and your inner body temperature drops, and then you just freeze to death. So I was thinking, but this is it. I can see the house. I'm so mad. And Mindy had to run in and get Mom to come out to save me because I thought I was going to die in the backyard. So did Mindy. Because I was stuck. But I remember being out there and sledding down a hill. Papaw piled all the snow out of the driveway into this hill, which couldn't have been, might have been 6 feet if it was that. And I don't even know that it was that tall. But I remember Mom getting her cookie sheets that she had, her cookie sheet pans. And we were sledding down this hill in this cookie sheet pans on our knees, because you could get in on your knees and hold on to that little lip on the side. And I remember going down that thing and losing my balance and hitting my face and getting a bloody nose. Ooh. Well, actually, we were at the neighbor's house. We were at the butcher's house over there sledding. Come down that thing and hit my face. And I remember seeing all the little drips of red in the snow all the way up the fence line and along the road and then down our driveway into the house. we could get it. And then I remember, I don't know if it was that same winter, I don't even think I was that old. But me and Mindy was out in the front yard playing. And I threw a snowball. We were throwing snowballs at the cars going by. And I threw a kind of like a slush ball at this semi truck going by because we lived on State Route 35. And this driver had his window cracked probably 4 inches. And my slush ball went in this man's window.
Oh my gosh.
And hit him. And he stopped. And I remember thinking, I gotta run. And I couldn't run. And Mindy was with me at that point. And of course, Mindy ditched me. She ran around the back of the neighbor's house and hid and was watching me. And this driver stopped. I remember watching him. He stopped his semi truck and backed it up. Got out, come and got me. And my little arm up over my head, clear up on my tiptoes as he marched me clear over there and around it to the house, you know, knocking on the door, telling mom, you know, about me misbehaving. She needs to be taking care of her kids and minding her kids because I've done thrown this snowball in his window, hit him while he's driving, and how misbehaving I was being, and blah, 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 this and that and whatever. And I thought I was dead. I was like, I'm dead. This man's going to kill me before I get to the house. And if he don't kill me, then mom's going to kill me because I knew not to throw stuff at the passing cars. Did it anyways. And I remember mom being so mad at this man that as soon as he left, she just let me go back out and play because she thought that was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And what a heck of a shot that was. That little girl could throw it far enough and got it in this man's moving vehicle and in the window.
So, the fact that he was probably going, what, 50, and you hit it?
Yeah.
Within a 4-inch gap.
Yeah, hit it in. What's the luck? I mean, that's just my kind of luck. I thought it would have hit the vehicle. Never in any of my days was I aiming to go in the window. I didn't even know his window was down, but that's my luck.
I'm surprised the man wasn't even impressed.
Right? Oh, he was livid. Oh, he was mad. He put them brakes. Put them brakes on and backed up. And I remember it was like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. I was running in place trying to move and I couldn't move. The snow was too deep. I couldn't get out of the way. And I remember looking around and my trick sister done ditched me, hiding around the corner of the house. I could see her peeking around the corner at me. And while I got drugged back over home and got my mom lectured for me being such a hooligan, being outside.
If you could go back and relive your teenage years, would you? Why or why not?
Ugh. Teenage?
Mm-hmm.
No way. I would not. You're so awkward as a teenager. And there's so much drama. And you fight so hard during that point to try to blend. Like, I think teenage years, I think of 7th grade and 8th grade. And 7th and 8th grade was where I really tried to blend. I wanted to be like everybody else because that was my second and my third year of being in a public school. So I didn't know everybody yet. I was still trying to make friends and I was trying to learn to acclimate in with the group and was trying to feather my hair, and I had curly hair and it didn't feather, and that's where I learned that designer clothes, Jordache, Izod, all this hubbub crap junk stuff that you're supposed to have to make you cool with all of that. That's what I worked on. And then by the time I got to be a freshman, I decided that this was for the birds. I didn't want to be like everybody else. I was going to be different. So my clothes just got louder from there. Neon, bright color, paint splashes, crazy looking stuff, buttons all over my coats, just anything to be different by that point. But there's no way. Man, your skin's funky. People are funky. Hair don't work. And you're just stressed at that point. It's just so stressful. It seems like it's just so stressful as teenage. Before is fun and after's fun. But teenage, you're finding your way at that point. So I wouldn't, not for teenage, I wouldn't go back. No way. Done it once. I don't want to do it again.
or just a transition phase of, I guess, no one really liked as much until the person they are now.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's part of the learning, that it's okay to be different, and learning how to take being teased. Because mm-hmm. they tease you. It seemed like it didn't matter what it was. Somebody was teasing you at that age for something. And it's so brutal because you don't even have your own bearings at that point. You've almost got your bearings that you're okay with stuff, mm-hmm. but not really. And everything's so brutal, and it feels like it's 1,000 times worse at that point. If somebody says something and it hurts your feelings, it just seems like it's 1,000 times worse. Nowadays, they say it to you, and you'd be like, eh, go sit in traffic. You know? You just really don't care. Mm-hmm. Don't know that I asked your permission. Don't know that I care about it. And never even asked for your opinion. So thanks, but no thanks. Mm-hmm. So no. Teenage? Nope. Been there, done that once. Do not want to go back. I wouldn't go back. That was weird and stressful.
I feel like it really doesn't matter what generation or year it is. It's always probably going to be like the same way of the action of the kids and all that.
Oh, yeah, because kids are always mean. They're always mean. They're brutally honest. To an extent, like little kids are honest. Mm-hmm. If you're overweight, they'll tell you you're fat. You mm-hmm. know, if you're really scary looking, they'll tell you you're scary looking, kind of stuff. So little ones are truthful. Older ones are mean because they haven't got their self established yet. And a lot of times, anything that's different, they point it out because it takes the focus off of them and puts it on somebody else. So they're so brutal. Anything that makes you different at that point was always pointed out, and it was never pointed out as being good. Mm-hmm. It was always pointed out as if there was something wrong because it was different, and everybody's different. And you don't learn that till you get older, really. So anything different was bad at that stage.
It's a weird concept. Mm-hmm. Now, tell me some of your favorite work stories.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know if I've got enough time.
It could just be like one or two.
Favorite work stories. Oh my gosh, I remember when I was working over at the Marriott. Was young and was working down in the swimming pool. And I was in charge of cleaning the pool, cleaning the scum line. Mm. Which is on the side of the, in the pool. And one of the Nimnut engineers went down to get me the stuff. This is great, Megan. This will clean your scum line right up. No, you won't even have to scrub that hard. This is great. Because I used to have to put my swimsuit on and get in the pool and clean. Now you can do it from the side. Get in there and do this. And it hazed the whole pool. It was not pool cleaner. I don't know what he gave me. No. But it hazed the entire pool. It hazed the inside pool and then the little divider, and then it goes to the outside pool, and it fogged the whole pool. And I remember standing down there thinking, oh my gosh. And the general manager of the hotel, Mr. Janice, the offices were upstairs, so he would always come through the pool. He would come in and he would go up the stairs because he wanted to check the pool and see how everything looked and all that. And he come in and stopped. And I remember him just looking at the pool, and I'm standing there like, I'm fired, I'm fired, I'm fired. And he's like, good morning, Megan. Hello, Mr. Janice. What's going on with the pool, you know? And I was like, oh, I was cleaning the scum line. Sorry about that. So, yeah. Yeah, that was embarrassing. I wanted to die right there. I mean, fogged the whole pool. It was so hazy, and you really couldn't see it happening at that point. But when you get up, because it's elevated, you walk down into the pool area. So from the top, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. Yeah, I still remember that. And I don't even know that I was 18, 19, if that. I still remember that junk. I don't even know if I was that old. Terrifying. What else you got?
I mean, that should just conclude our stories.
That's our last ones?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. And then my one at work of people teasing me when I was driving a semi. Pulled up out in California and had to back into this crazy dock, and it was a tight fit, and you had to back in on your blind side. And I pulled up, lined up, backed right into the dock, first shot. Came out, got up there, and of course it's all guys running the dock and the forklifts and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Had a bunch of heckling about it, you know, whatever. Well, then here come another driver. As they were unloading mine, I had a bunch of produce on, and they were unloading the produce. And this other driver had to fit between me and the wall.
Oh.
And it's a tight fit, man, because they had a big long, the work area was enclosed by a big fence.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to get it around my truck and over, because that was the only other dock door they had open. And me and the guys on the dock was watching this guy, and he's up and back and up and back and up and back and could not get into the spot. And one of the forklift drivers, well, it was the manager of the dock, the receiving manager, was giggling about this little girl. Driver come up and was talking about, man, nobody can make that corner, this, that, or whatever. He gave up trying to do it and come in and asked the guys on the receiving dock if one of them would go out there and back his truck
mm-hmm.
in, because he had to go, he didn't have any more time. And they started taking up a bet, teasing about, well, this little girl back that truck in there, and they were taking a wager of whether I could back this guy's truck I'd never drove and back it into that dock or not. And I was so mouthy at that point. I was like, sure, do I get part of the cut? If I get part of the cut, I'll go bump a dock. I don't care, you know, whatever. Got out there, shut the door, and I'm thinking, Lord Jesus, have mercy. Help a sister out here, because I've done bit off more than I can chew. I don't know if I'll be able to put this man's truck in the dock, but can't be as bad as what he was doing. He was out here for over 20 minutes, forward and back. So if I can do this, just help me out, man. Just cut me a favor, you know. Pulled up in that dude. Pulled up around there and lined it up and put that dude right in the bay. First shot, pulled right up in there and boop, boop, put it right in there. I was in as much shock as what I think everybody else was. But I hit the brakes, you know, got out of the truck, and I can hear the guys all back here hooting and hollering and screaming and everything. And that poor driver, that man, was so fit to be tied. But I got $50 out of it, man. They split the pot with me of everybody taking bets of whether I could do it or whether I couldn't do it.
Nice.
And luckily enough, I did it. And I got $50, which at that point, man, that was big money to me.
Mm-hmm.
I got $50. So
just for backing in the truck.
Yeah. A first shot, nonetheless. First shot, no kidding. You know, wouldn't have been able to do it again for $1,000. But on the first shot, I did. I hopped in that truck, shut that door, and I'm like, Lord, help a sister out, man. I done been more than I can chew. Could use a favor right now. And of all things, luckily enough, I did. I bumped it, pulled it right into the, bumped the dock right on there. Perfect. It was funny.
That's actually pretty cool.
That's cool. It was cool. It was fun. That was my favorite job, driving a truck. That was fun.
All right. Looks like all the time we'll have.
We out of time.
Yep.
All right, Bubba. This was fun. I'm glad you had me interviewed.
I've never heard any of these stories before.
It's all kinds of stuff. This is the stuff you keep quiet.
Yeah.
Or Grandma tells on you, one of the two. Mm-hmm. Grandma has a habit of doing that to me as well.
So, thank you for spending time with me and answering some of these questions.
Not a problem. This was fun.
I enjoyed it.
Me too.